call this meeting of the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy to order. There is a quorum present. The first order of business is to approve the minutes from last meeting. Chair Pinto, would you approve the minutes for March 23rd, 2023?
I move approval of the minutes of March 23rd, Madam Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 23rd, 2023 are approved. Members, we did it. We made it to Omnibus Week. And before we begin the walkthrough on the DE amendment, I'm going to share the outline and the expectations for the week. So today we will have House Counsel walk through the DE amendment and the fiscal spreadsheet. We will then take public testimony on the bill. And I'll also note that in your packets, members, and posted online, we have a number of letters related to the DE, so be sure to take a look at those. We will not be taking any official action on House File 2890 today. Thursday will be our markup day, and on Thursday we'll adopt the DE amendment and then take up any other amendments. The amendment deadline will be at noon tomorrow. And then our plan is to vote the bill out of committee on Thursday. There will be no additional public testimony on Thursday. And then lastly, members, you'll see you have a note with your name on the DE amendment. For the sake of saving some trees, we're hoping to reuse that document. So you can just leave that. We'll put it back in your packets again. Or if you take the DE with you, just please bring it back to committee with you. And before we get into the walkthrough and the public testimony, I just want to speak for a minute and give sort of a broad overview of what's in this bill. When we started this committee, I said one thing that was really important for us was the fact that people lack confidence in our public safety system. When we don't have a system that people trust, victims don't report crimes, witnesses don't come forward, people that are supposed to be held accountable aren't, and we have a problem. And we have a lot of work to do in this committee, and we've done a lot of work to try to rebuild that trust in our system. And I really truly believe that this bill does that in a transformational way. This bill has substantial funding for victims. We have over $70 million allocated to victims, including closing the federal gap that's coming, the Missing and Murdered Black Women and Girls Office, sexual assault state kit testing moving from counties to the state level. And that doesn't include additional grant funding that's available for those programs. For law enforcement, we have over $100 million allocated. We've got the Violent Crime Reduction Initiative with the BCA to help local communities with increase in violent crime. We have a really important police recruitment bill that's included in this, and we're caring about mental health of our first responders with this bill. We have a transformational funding to our probation and rehabilitation systems. And I will just note that it's our intent to do the formula that was agreed on. It's not in this spreadsheet, but that is something that we plan to incorporate. It's just with how things were working out when we were drafting it, we didn't get to that for purposes of today. But we've got a substantial investment in our probation system. We understand that for people who are in the system, we must give them the right sorts of services and help and treatment in order to be productive members of society again. And we also want to incentivize people to do those things who are incarcerated through programs like MRRA. We're also recognizing and addressing safety needs of our facilities. We've got addressing collateral consequences and post-conviction issues through the Clean Slate Act and prosecutor-initiated resentencing. We're addressing local emergencies. We also have accountability built into this bill. We have funded post-investigators at the level that the ALJ recommended when the rules were revised to make sure that when there are complaints, they're properly investigated. We are funding the governor's request for a state fraud unit to make sure that the funding that we're allocating, that's being allocated in the state, is being used properly. We've got funding for the private detective board, that bill we just heard last week, to make sure that people who are acting as private detectives but aren't licensed, that we're able to look into that, fix that problem. We have all kinds of things related to current crimes that we're facing in society and modernization of our system. We've got massive violence prevention in our bill because we know that preventing crime, preventing violence, is really important in the overall package of public safety that we're talking about. We're addressing the fentanyl issue, organized retail theft. We have hate crimes, labor trafficking, qualified domestic violence offenses, and we have some provisions related to carjacking. And I'll just note, when it comes to that, we know that a lot of those cases are because of juveniles. And so we understand the need really in that arena is to provide the right resources and response to juveniles. Our juvenile system is broken. And I think that what we have in this bill is a great first step. And there are other things that we can be doing, but we've got good grants through YIPA. We've got Ramsey County's therapeutic homes, and then restorative justice practices that we've heard about that have been so successful throughout our state, and we'd like to expand on that. As I mentioned, we have a substantial investment in violence prevention. We know that there is good community work being done, and we want to lift that up and continue that work to prevent violence. And also, we want to prevent gun violence. We have the criminal background check bill in this. We have extreme risk protection orders, the bill that increases penalties for auto sears, and then some funding for gun violence research. So this really is a transformational bill, and I think it covers all aspects of our public safety system, and I'm ready to get into the discussion and hear from our testifiers today. Thank you. And with that, we will move over to House Counsel to walk through the spreadsheet and the DE amendments, and I believe John Walls is going to start us off with the spreadsheet.
Madam Chair, John Walls, House Fiscal Staff. All members should have a copy of the spreadsheet in their packet. I'm going to start on page one. The left columns that are shaded gray are the governor's recommendation for the budget in this area. The House columns, or what represent the DE to House File 2890, are the rightmost columns. And for those of you who are not familiar with how some of these spreadsheets are laid out, each little box is either represents a small agency or what we call a program or an office within a larger agency. The top line will represent their base funding. Then you will have additions to that funding that are proposed in the bill, and then the new total at the bottom of each box. So, Madam Chair and members, for example, on line two, we have the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, our first agency in the bill. Their base is line two, $765,000 per year. We add to that an initiative called Maintain Current Service Levels. You'll see this throughout the spreadsheet, and that is essentially additional money for salary increases, health insurance increases, rent, and other small items at each agency or program. So line five adds $26,000 in the first year and $54,000 the second year for those types of needs. On line six, sentencing guidelines requested money to expand analysis of sentencing-related data. We provide $125,000 the first year and $124,000 ongoing for that. There is, on line seven, improved fiscal transparency, a $50,000 addition to allow the agency to purchase more human resources and other services through the SMART teams, which are small agency resource teams provided, I believe, by administration. On line eight, fully integrate with the court system. This is an IT request for $340,000 in fiscal year 24 and $348,000 in 25, with $78,000 a year ongoing in 26 and 27. And then we have a comprehensive review of sentencing guidelines. This is a two-year project which would add one person temporarily. It's $243,000 in the first year and $147,000 in fiscal 25. And this would bring sentencing guidelines new total to 1.549 in 24, 1.488 in fiscal year 25. Some of that money is temporary, and so you see in the tails column for 26 and 27, their ongoing new base is $1,071,000 per year. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to move on to public safety. Their first program is Homeland Security and Emergency Management. You can see on lines 16 and 17, there are two different funds there, and those are their base amounts. That's what's already built into their budget, and so we move down to line 19, maintain current service levels. There is an addition of $444,000 for the biennium. That's, again, salary, insurance, and other inflationary needs. On line 21, we add $300,000 per year for the school safety center request. On line 22, House File 2078 for supplemental security grants, $250,000 a year for 2 years. On line 23, House File 1273, emergency management grants, that is $2 million per year for 2 years. On line 24, House File 1075, emergency radio grants, this is $1 million per year for 2 years. And on line 25, Madam Chair, I would say about some of these requests that are going for 2 years, much of that is a function of our target where we were provided money for to fund items in this biennium but did not have money to support them ongoing. And so you may see this repeated throughout the spreadsheet. On line 25, House File 1617, a Grand Portage Emergency Management Coordinator, $145,000 per year ongoing. On line 26, House File 1948, Chippewa Coast Guard equipment purchase, $3 million in fiscal 2024 only. On line 27, House File 41, a Fusion Center report of $115,000 per year ongoing to report on the Fusion Center's activities, and I understand this is in the wrong area. This may move to BCA in the future. On line 28, again, maintain current service levels. The reason this is on two lines is the top line is their general fund addition, and on line 28 is their addition for the purpose that is funded by the environmental fund. And Madam Chair, on lines 35, you would have the new total for Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Moving to page two, it brings us to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. You see their base funding moving down to the additions. Maintain current service levels. We add $9.2 million in 24, $11.4 million in 25 for salary and insurance needs. We add on line 43 the use of force investigations unit. That is $4.4 million per year addition. That also is ongoing funding. For FBI compliance, critical IT and cybersecurity on line 50, we add $3 million in 24, $2 million in 25, and that is the ongoing amount into the future is $2 million. On line 51, the chair mentioned a new state fraud unit of $1.3 million ongoing. On line 54, House File 1279, this would be reimbursements for the state to pick up the cost of sexual assault exams. That's $3.967 million in 24, $3.767 million in fiscal year 25. On line 55, we have House File 2034. This is a time limit for the processing of sexual assault exam kits. The fiscal note identified that the BCA would need additional lab techs, and so the funding is provided for to meet that need and comply within the time limit, $440,000 in fiscal year 24 and $380,000 per year ongoing. On line 56, House File 2023, Clean Slate Act. There is some work that the BCA needs to do with the record system. Is $3.737 million in fiscal year 24 and $190,000 a year ongoing. On line 57, costs related to systems work for gun purchase background checks, House File 14, that is $70,000 in fiscal year 24 only. And on line 58, House File 15, gun storage grants, the bill provides $250,000 a year in 2024. Madam Chair, moving down to the fire marshal. Their base in the special revenue and general fund are listed on lines 68 and 69 respectively. To that, we add money on line 72 for maintaining current service levels. We add money for additional staffing on line 74 of $2.5 million per year. On line 75, we add money for maintaining current service levels, $485,000 in the first year and $838,000 in fiscal 25 and ongoing. And we also add money for hazardous materials response and bomb squad of $453,000 on line 76. And that is per year and ongoing. Moving down to the Board of Firefighter Training, they have their base of $6,175,000 per year, and there are no additions to that base. Madam Chair, moving to page 3, gambling and alcohol enforcement. The bases are on lines 92 and 93. We add money to maintain their current service levels, and their totals are on lines 99 through 101. On line 103, we begin the Office of Justice Programs. Their bases are on lines 103 and 104. To that, we add money for maintaining current service levels. We add $11 million a year to fill the Federal Victims of Crime funding gap. That is also ongoing. On line 108, we add the office's request for additional OJP staffing. This will fund about 11 new positions, $666,024 and $1.334 million in fiscal year 25 and ongoing. We add $1.25 million for domestic and sexual violence housing on line 109. And on line 110, we establish the Murdered and Missing African American Women's Office, and that is $1.248 million per year. Moving down to line 117, there is $500,000 a year for the House File 46 Office of Juvenile Restorative Justice. On line 118, also from House File 46, we have dual status youth programs for $1 million per year. On line 120, House File 600, Ramsey County Juvenile Treatment Homes, $5 million one time to purchase and rehabilitate treatment homes. On line 121, again, House File 600, Ramsey County Violence Prevention, $1.25 million for ongoing grants to run those homes. On line 122, we have House File 1048 Youth Intervention Grants, a $7.5 million a year increase to those grants. On line 123, we have House File 25 Community Co-Responder Grants. We have $3 million per year in this biennium and $4.5 million ongoing beginning in fiscal year 2026. On line 124, House File 1836, we have $100,000 a year for 2 years for prosecutor training. On line 125, House File 818, Violence Research Grants is $250,000 a year ongoing. On line 126, House File 1415, we have developing a first responder mental health curriculum that is $25,000 one time. On line 127, we have House File 506, First Responder Therapy, at $100,000 in fiscal year 2024. On line 128, House File 610, we have a peer-to-peer therapy in fiscal year 2024 of $250,000. That is a one-time grant. On line 129, House File 2294, is a substance abuse study. It is $118,000 for 2 years. On line 130, House File 2251, the Children's Legal Defense is a 2-year grant at $150,000 per year. On line 131, House File 1103, First Responder Mental Health is $1 million a year ongoing. Line 132, House File 2295, a pretrial release study, is $250,000 for 2 years, and that brings us on lines 137, 38, and 39, the totals for the Office of Justice Programs. Moving on to the emergency communication networks, we have their base on line 141. We have on line 144 a $7 million one-time appropriation for next generation funding to locals of $7 million, and their totals on line 151. On line 153, Public Safety Administration, this was an area that is, their base is funded through the Department of Transportation, or I'm sorry, through the Transportation Finance Committee, so we are funding programs in that area but do not carry their base. On line 157, we have the expansion of the line of duty benefit. There is an addition of $1.5 million ongoing, and also in fiscal year 2023, a $1 million addition to make up for a shortfall they have against current claims against that fund. On line 158, the soft body armor expansion, we add $1 million per year to that program. Madam Chair, on lines 168 through 175 are the totals for the Department of Public Safety by fund and the overall total. Moving to line 177, Post Board, their base is $11.5 million per year. To that we add maintain current staff service levels, 54,000 the first year, 105 the second year and ongoing. Additional staffing, $1.45 million the first year and $1.2 million ongoing. This will fund, I believe it's an additional eight staff. We have on line 184, space needs and business operation, there's an addition of $228,000 in fiscal 24 and $30,000 in 25 and ongoing. Totals for Post Board are on line 189. On line 192, we have the Private Detectives Board. They have a base of $288,000 per year. There's an addition for staffing. On line 195, a $460,000 the first year, $380,000 the second year, and ongoing, I believe that funds four additional positions. And on line 196, maintain current service levels, an addition of $30,000 for the biennium. Again, this is for salary increases and health insurance. Madam Chair, moving to page five, we begin the Department of Corrections. On line 202, the base for incarceration and pre-release services. To this, we add the operating deficiency on line 205. This is to meet their current obligations in the current fiscal year. It is $12,643,000. On line 206, maintain current service levels, we add $108 million for the biennium. Line 207, prison population increase. This was an unforeseen increase in the number of commits to the Department of Corrections that was not currently funded at the level needed in their base, so we add $10 million for the biennium for that request. We have body-worn cameras for employees at the Department of Corrections, $1 million per year ongoing. On line 209, we have the Prison Rape Elimination Act, which is some additional staffing at $1 million per year ongoing on line 209. On 210, the armor radio system upgrades required by the department, we add $1.5 million per year ongoing. On line 211, the Fugitive Apprehension Unit or Special Investigations receives an addition of $199,000 in 24 and $1.865 in fiscal year 25. Going down to line 214, we add funding for 24-hour nursing at five facilities so that they have nurses throughout the day. That is a $3.6 million addition for the biennium. On line 222, additional education staffing. This is $5.4 million addition for the biennium, $2.9 million a year ongoing. On line 234, this is to bring down the cost of offender phone calls. $2 million a year is in ongoing funding. That's, again, line 234. On line 237, the next several of these, many of these are the bed impact for some increased penalties. On line 237, House File 424, these are qualified domestic orders. There's a small cost of $66,000 for the biennial. Increased penalties from House File 615 regarding treating fentanyl, I believe the same as heroin, is a small bed impact. On line 1406, the aiding and abetting felony murder, this would result in, I believe, the release of some people, and so you're seeing a savings in bed prison beds on line 239. On line 240, House File 450, organized retail theft, and additional bed impact of $1.3 million for the biennial. On line 241, House File 2167 is for support of art, $150,000, that is one time. And on line 242, the bed impact of House File 2609, short-barreled shotgun increased penalties. Madam Chair, that brings us to the top of page six. Community supervision and post-release services. Their base is on line 247. Maintain current service levels is an addition of $5.888 million on line 250. We have the increased funding for community supervision. As the chair mentioned, this would add money to the three delivery systems and is similar to what the governor has in his funding. However, there is an amendment forthcoming that will change both the funding formula and the delivery systems at a later date. But this represents roughly the funding that will be added. And so on line 252, it's currently a DOC probation increase of $11.5 million for the biennium. For CPO, it's $10.74 million for the biennium. And for CCA on line 254, $64,104,000. On line 255, tribal supervision, $5.5 million for the biennium. On line 256, $10 million for the biennium for community supervision grants and an administrator position. On line 258, at $532,000 for the biennium is a DOC request for successful reentry for public safety. On line 259 is for ongoing sex offender treatment once they leave prison at $2.4 million per year. On line 260, public safety through stable housing, another DOC request is funded at $2.13 million per year. Moving down to line 265, House File 1134, a local study for jail capital improvements, $150,000 in fiscal 2024 only. On line 266, House File 46 moves JDAI from the Department of Corrections to MNSCU. So there is a subtraction here of $500,000 per year in the Department of Corrections, and it is later added to MNSCU in the spreadsheet. On line 267, House File 147, alternatives to incarceration, Maurer County, $160,000 a year ongoing is added for that. On line 268, House File 2282, increase to the work release program of $500,000 per year ongoing. And on line 269, House File 824, county discharge planning and a position to oversee that. $1,080,000 per year ongoing. This brings us to line 274, organizational, regulatory, and administrative services, or what some refer to as the central office for DOC. Their base of $31,700,000 is on line 274. The additions are for maintain current service levels of $30,800,000 on line 277. A request for public safety data infrastructure is added at $1 million per year ongoing. And then on line 281, an indeterminate sentence release board, $40,000 per year, and on line 283, a clemency review commission at $986,000 per year, which brings us on line 286, the total for administrative services, and then on line 288, the total funding to the Department of Corrections. Madam Chair, the Ombudsman for Corrections on 292, their base, the addition for maintaining current service levels on 295, for additional staff on line 296, and their total on line 299. On page 7, the section Other Agencies beginning on line 2, these were bills that were included in our in the DE amendment, but required funding to agencies outside of this committee. House File 1406, aiding and abetting felony murder. There is a one-time cost for representation at the public defender that is $750,000 in fiscal year 2024 only. House File 46, as I mentioned earlier, there's an appropriation to MNSCU to move JDAI to MNSCU. That is $500,000 per year ongoing. On line 304, House File 15, extreme risk protection orders to the Supreme Court. This would be the cost of extreme risk protection order hearings, $91,024 and $182,000 ongoing. That's line 304. Line 305, House File 2253, is use of force training, and that appropriation is to the Office of Higher Education. On line 311 are the general fund transfers. On line 312 is the transfer from the general fund to the community justice account. That is an ongoing transfer that is sort of something that has been going on for several years as a result of a drug reform bill about 6 years ago. On line 313, the transfer to the disaster contingency account. Oh, I'm sorry, that has been moved and will travel separately as part of an individual bill. On line 314, the transfer to the violent crime reduction account. This is $75,000 or $75 million one time. This is creating a special revenue account to hand out grants for violent crime reduction. On line 315, we have a similar transfer to the community crime and violence prevention account. That is a one-time transfer of $100 million. On line 316, we have House File 1376, an Indigenous Reward Fund special revenue account created that is $250,000 one time. And on line 317, House File 2465, this creates a Peace Officer Education and Training account, and the transfer into that account is $10 million for the biennium. Madam Chair, on lines 327, through 350, we have some totaling of the bill, and that moves us to page, the final page, page 8. The box from lines 352 to 359 just measures the overall spending against the established target by the budget resolution adopted in Ways and Means, and on line 359, there's nothing that appears there which shows we are neither over nor under, but on the target suggested. On line 360 is the fiscal impacts to other funds. And so on line 362, there was a provision included that increases the surcharge on fire insurance premiums from 0.5% to 0.65%. This creates an additional amount of $5.1 million of revenue into that fund per year, so that new revenue is reflected on line 362. On lines 363 and 364, we see the transfer in of the revenue from the general fund to those two new special revenue funds, and on lines 365 and 366 begins the appropriation of those funds from the special revenue account. So on line 365, violent crime reduction grants will begin at $15 million per year ongoing to fund grants to local communities to reduce violent crime. On line 366, Community Crime Prevention Grants, again, $20 million a year ongoing from the newly created fund. These will be administered by the Office of Justice Programs. On line 367 is a transfer, is the transfer in of the money to the Peace Officer Education and Training Account of $5 million. This is appropriated, I believe, then in statute to the Office of Higher Education, and they are allowed to spend this money for Peace Officer Education and Training. And on line 368 is the transfer in to the Indigenous Reward Fund, and again, there is statutory authority to spend that reward fund when the awards are paid out. And Madam Chair, that's the end of the spreadsheet walkthrough.
Thank you, Mr. Wells, for that. And just a quick correction here on line 314 and line 365, House File 25, transferred to the Violent Crime Reduction Account. Those aren't grants. That's a transfer to the VCA. And we'll see that language as we get into the bill. And I think we'll correct that says grants on line 365. We'll make that correction. Moving on now, I believe Ben Johnson is going to go next.
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to start walking through the remaining articles of the bill. I'm going to do this at a very high level, simply identifying the sections, what bills they came from, and letting you know if there are changes from language that was heard in committee. So if you turn to the bill and not the spreadsheet, if you want to follow along, I'm beginning with Article 2, which begins on page 34. Article 2 contains provisions relating to general crimes and penalties. Section 1 is from House File 111. It makes a conforming change. Sections 2 and 3 are from House File 42. Those eliminate the term blackmail, which was replaced by a different term. Section 4, I'm on page 37, line 15 now, is from House File 424. This is the change in the list of qualified domestic violence-related offenses. This does differ slightly from what was heard in committee. There are some limits now on the categories of third-degree murder and both first- and second-degree manslaughter, two provisions that are more related to crimes that are related to relationships. I'm moving on to Section 5 now. This is page 38, line 4. This is a change to the crime of felony murder. This was from House File 1406. Sections 6 and 7, which begin at page 38, line 15, are changes to the crime of assaults motivated by bias. Those are both from House File 181. Section 8 contains technical changes to the crime of kidnapping. This is done to facilitate data, and this was House File 803. Section 9, which is page 39, line 27, amends the exception that's related to causing the death of an unborn child. It removes a potential inconsistency if Section 145.412 is repealed, which is possible in another bill this session. This provision is from House File 91. Sections 10 all the way through 21 are provisions from House File 42. These were the changes to the crime of labor trafficking. Those sections begin at page 40, line 5, and run all the way through page 44, line 7. Again, no changes from what was heard in committee. Section 22 is the new crime of organized retail theft. Section 23, which is on page 45, beginning at line 27, contains some additional provisions from House File 450 related to the crime of organized retail theft. Sections 24 and 25 amend the crimes of burglary. These were also from House File 450. Sections 26 and 27, which is page 48, line 27, amend the crime of criminal damage to property in cases that are motivated by bias. This is from House File 181. Sections 28 and 29, those are from House File 2609. This is the provision that addresses the possession of machine guns. Section 28, which is page 50, line 24, is new from what was heard in committee. Representative Mueller referenced that there would be an amendment. This is the amendment. It amends the definition of trigger activator. Section 30, which is page 51, line 25, is the change to the crime of surreptitious intrusion from House File 111. Section 31 addresses stalking in cases motivated by bias. Again, this is House File 181. Sections 32 and 33 are the deep fake crimes that were from House File 1370. Section 34, which takes us to page 59, line 25, is also from House File 111. This amends the statute of limitations in cases that involve surreptitious intrusion. Section 35, which is the final section in this article, is a repealer. There are two provisions. The first is from House File 42. It removes the term blackmail from statute. The second is from House File 91. It repeals the crimes of sodomy, fornication, and adultery. Madam Chair, I'm going to move to Article 3. This is an article that deals with public safety and crime victim policy. Article 3 begins on page 61 at line 14. The first two sections are from House File 1279. These require the state instead of the county to pay for medical examination costs for criminal sexual conduct victims. Section 3 establishes the Office of Restorative Practices. This is from House File 46. It goes for several pages, so Section 4 begins at page 68, line 27. That provision at 6827 is the increase to the insurance policy surcharge for the fire safety account. It moves it from 0.5% to 0.65%. That was House File 2678. Section 5 was from House File 2890. It was also in House File 1127. This expands the soft body armor program to include additional first responders beyond peace officers. Section 6, we're now on page 71 at line 3, expands the definition of killed in the line of duty. This was also in House File 2890. It was also contained in House File 2681. Section 7 requires the Office of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives to include information about the new reward fund in its annual report. This was House File 1376. Section 8 establishes the Office of Missing and Murdered Black Women. That was House File 55. Section 9 brings us all the way to page 76, line 25. That section requires a report on the Fusion Center activities. That was House File 41. Section 10 establishes a state fraud unit in the BCA. That was from House File 2890. Section 11, page 79, line 20, is the requirement for testing sexual assault kits within 90 days. That was House File 2034. Section 12 is another provision from House File 55. It requires the BCA to operate a missing persons alert program. The next set of sections, which run from Section 13 all the way through Section 19, are the provisions of House File 406 that require carbon monoxide alarms. That takes us all the way to Section 20. Section 20 is on page 82, starts at line 8. That section directs that fees and penalties collected under Chapter 299M, which is the Fire Protection Industry Licensing chapter, must be deposited in a state fire marshal account in the Special Revenue Fund. This was House File 2026. Section 21 is a technical cross-reference from House File 2890. Section 22, page 83, line 12, is the private cause of action for non-consensual dissemination of deepfakes depicting intimate parts or sexual acts. That was from House File 1370. Section 23, which takes us to page 86, line 18, is another provision from House File 1279 that requires the state to pay for examinations of criminal sexual conduct victims. The next series of sections, from Section 24 to Section 28, are from House File 2890. These are the changes that make the term battered woman into the term domestic abuse victim, and also include some housing services in the category of services that can be provided to domestic abuse victims through certain grants. Section 29 takes us to page 89, line 26. This directs the Commissioner of Public Safety to amend the rules related to the soft body armor program. Section 30 is from House File 1376. This establishes a reward fund for missing and murdered indigenous relatives. This has changed from when it was heard in committee. Most significantly, this provision has been moved out of coded statute into session law. Session law still has the effect of law, but it's no longer coded. That was done in part because it now expires. This would expire on June 30th, 2025. Section 31 is a repealer. It repeals the sunset on the Independent Use of Force Investigations Unit in the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. This was in House File 2890. Madam Chair, I'm going to move on to Article 4 now. Article 4 deals with sentencing provisions. Sections 1 and 2, that begins at page 92, line 13, change the appointing authority for some of the individuals on the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Section 2 has been amended since it was heard in committee. It clarifies that the new appointments made by the governor at the start of 2027 will involve staggered terms so that Some members will serve four-year terms and some will serve two-year terms. This was from House File 2956. Section 3 requires a report from the Sentencing Guidelines Commission on prosecutor-initiated resentencing. Sections 4 all the way through Section 9 are from House File 43. These amend the maximum length of a gross misdemeanor sentence from 1 year down to 364 days and also make changes to the definition of felony. There are some conforming changes in those sections as well. Section 10 is page 96, line 1. This is from House File 226. This establishes the prosecutor-initiated sentence adjustment. This version is slightly different from what was in committee. It adopts some small changes from the Senate and also removes the staggered start to the program that was added when the bill was heard in committee. The next three sections, 11, 12, and 13, running from page 99, line 24, all the way through page 102, line 2, are provisions related to the five-year cap on probation length from House File 1607. There's one small change from when it was heard in committee. The crime of stalking has been added to the list of exceptions. Section 14 is the retroactive application of the change in felony murder laws, again from House File 1406. And Section 15 is the retroactive provision for the change in the length of probation. That's House File 1607. Section 16 is also from House File 1607. That directs the Sentencing Guidelines Commission to amend the guidelines to conform with the new statutory cap on probation. And finally, in this article, Section 17 is a revisor instruction related to the change in the length of gross misdemeanors. Madam Chair, I'm moving to Article 5. Article 5, I'm going to do at a very high level. This is an expungement provision. This committee heard several provisions related to expungement. House File 1083 dealt with expungement of cases involving mistaken identity. 1084 dealt with cases involving an expungement after a pardon. And 2023 creates a new automatic expungement procedure. House File 111 also had a cross-reference change within those same set of statutes. Because these statutes dealt with many of the same provisions, there has been some technical changes to harmonize the language. Some of them amended the identical sections of law. They are substantially similar in terms of the policy impact. It's mostly technical changes to incorporate the changes that were made to the same sections of law. I'm going to move to Article 6. This is page 134, line 5 now. Article 6, at the highest level, is from House File 2788. This is the language that was heard in committee. This is the changes to the clemency reform. There are some slight changes. They match what was adopted in the Senate, and my understanding is those were requested from the Department of Corrections. It's going to take us to Article 7, which will be the final article that I walk through. Article 7 relates to evidence gathering and reporting. Article 7 begins on page 148 at line 21. Sections 1 through 4 are all from House File 450. They deal with the release of certain information from financial institutions to law enforcement agencies. The next set of sections, which are sections 5 to 7, contain the prohibition on no-knock warrants. These sections contain some changes from what was heard in this committee, but they are the changes that were made in the Judiciary Committee to address the suppression of evidence. It takes us to Section 8, which is on page 152, line 15. This is another provision from House File 450 related to financial institutions. Section 9 is a conforming change related to the no-knock warrant changes. Section 10, which is page 153, line 25, is the carjacking report from House File 281. Section 11 from House File 686, this is page 154, line 14, addresses the use of mobile tracking devices on stolen motor vehicles. And Section 12 is a repealer. It repeals the provisions relating to the use of no-knock search warrants. That also was from House File 2290. Madam Chair, that completes my portion of the walkthrough. I'd ask that you recognize Mr. Diebel.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Diebel.
Madam Chair and members, I'm prepared to go through section by section, but I could also do an overview and just identify which bills are in each article, if that would expedite time and allow you time for it.
Thank you, Mr. Diebel. Let's do that because there are a lot of testifiers here I want to get to. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. So Article 8 is entitled Policing and Private Security. It contains eight bills. House File 855, Representative Frazier's Peace Officers Oversight Reform Bill. Pieces of that are in there. House File 2510, the Board of Private Detectives and Protective Agent Service Reform Bill. That's from Chair Moeller. House File 181, Representative Bang's hate crimes bill. House File 538, Representative Frazier's hate and extremist group ban for peace officers. House File 822, Representative Graham's peace officer discipline data bill. Representative Grant's House File 823, Peace Officer Background Check Bill, and House File 2465, Representative Hewitt's Peace Officer Expedited Education and Training Bill, but only the educational piece of that, not the medical insurance. And finally, in Article 8, House File 2173, Chair Beckerfin's Tribal Law Enforcement Bill. Moving to Article 9, which is entitled Corrections Policy. It contains 10 bills. The first is Representative Tapke's private prison ban, House File 1200. The second is Representative Grant's correctional facility licensing bill, that's House File 824. The third is Chair Pinto's juvenile detention policy bill, which is House File 1233. The fourth is Representative Grant's fugitive apprehension unit reform bill, which is House File 1523. The fifth is Representative Tapke's corrections ombudsperson bill, which is House File 745. Sixth is Representative Tapke's Indeterminate Sentencing Release Board, House File 1321. Chair Beckerfin's Tribal Probation Bill is included in this article as well. That's House File 1864. Representative Feist's Juvenile Risk Assessment Bill, House File 1511 is included. House File 1462, Representative Tapke's Mental Health Pilot Project for Jail Inmates is included. And finally, Chair Lee's Jail Study Bill, House File 1134, is included. Moving to Article 10, which is entitled the Minnesota Rehabilitation and Reinvestment Act. This is this article is solely House File 1319, which was authored by Chair Beckerfin. Article 11 is entitled Firearms Background Check, and this is House File 14 from Chair Pinto's proposal. Article 12 is Representative Frazier's House File 15, which is the Emergency Risk Protection Order. One substantive change in this article is that mental health professionals are no longer authorized to seek an Emergency Risk Protection Order under this version of the bill in the omnibus, DE. Moving to Article 13, this is Controlled Substance Policy. It contains three bills. One is Representative Baker's Fentanyl Reform Bill, which is House File 615. The second is Chair Beckerfin's Tribal Parks Bill, which is House File 1877. And the third is Representative Gomez's Syringe and Drug Paraphernalia Bill, which is House File 2041. Moving to Article 14, Controlled Substances Schedule. This is the substance of Representative Bierman's update to the Controlled Substances Schedules, which was we heard earlier this session. And Article 15 is the final article of the DE, and that is the Emergency Communication System Reform Bill that came from the agency and is from the underlying House File 2980, Article 8. And Madam Chair, that concludes the overview.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much to our staff for the walkthrough and for all of the great work you've done putting this together. Next, we're going to move on to public testimony, and we had folks sign up in advance, so we're not going to be taking any additional testimony. We've got quite a list ahead of us, and people who signed up, thank you. We're told 90 seconds, so we're going to be timing everybody that's speaking. And as I call your names as being on deck, please start making your way down so we don't spend time just shuffling around in the chairs. And we'll begin with Elliot Butai, and then we've got Marsha Milliken and Jeffrey Lundy. And just a reminder to all the testifiers, please introduce yourself and then you can begin your testimony. Welcome back. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, members. Elliot Butai with NAMI Minnesota. Thanks for the opportunity to speak in support of many of the provisions in this bill. There are too many for the time I have, which is a great thing. We are grateful for the inclusion of the Mental Health Legislative Network's bill, House File 824, which makes phone calls free from a jail if they're to mental health providers or for mental health reasons, and bolsters our model discharge plans for people leaving jails, and also provides really important funding for jail social workers and reentry programs. We're really supportive of the investments to make phone calls and video calls free for people in prisons. And to build partnerships with law enforcement and to build the capacity of our mobile crisis teams. We are strongly supporting banning disciplinary room time and reducing and regulating strip searches of juveniles, and also very supportive of the Minnesota Rehabilitation and Reinvestment Act and the Office of Restorative Justice. And we're also grateful for your work on the red flag law, which will protect people who are at risk of suicide and also help protect their privacy. You know, we're generally supportive of a lot of the juvenile justice provisions, the support for people that are incarcerated and first responder wellness, and for the investments in community supervision. So I know we don't have much time, but, you know, NAMI represents people with mental illnesses and their families, and I just think it's important to recognize that mental illness doesn't care what your job is or what role you play in the legal system. So to that end, we're really grateful for your work in this committee. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Marsha Milliken's next, and we have Jeffrey Lundy and then Mary Moriarty. Please, other people, start waking your way down. Like, come sit in these chairs over here. Come on down. Okay, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and members of the House Public Safety Committee. I'm Marsha Milliken, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Children's Alliance. The Children's Alliance is one of six coalitions serving victims of crime in our state. Together, we advocate for children and families who experienced crime and abuse and victim survivors of domestic and sexual violence. Today, I'm testifying in support of House File 2890, a public safety omnibus bill that would allocate funds for crime victim service organizations. We're happy to see investments into programs serving victims of crime in our state. We're glad to see an $11 million increase in base funding for crime victim services at a level that will close the gap created by federal funding shortfalls. While the six anti-violence coalitions will continue to advocate for our requested increase of $25 million annually, we recognize that the committee has invested significant time, energy, and funding into victim services during this legislative session. We look forward to continuing to work together to support victims of crime, child abuse, sexual, and domestic violence. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Jeffrey Lundy, then Mary Moriarty, and Trista Mattis Castillo. Welcome, and please begin.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Jeffrey Lundy. I'm Hennepin County Commissioner. Also chair of the Public Safety Committee for Hennepin County. There continues to be a critical need for an integrated approach of public safety and behavioral health working together to support residents facing mental health related challenges. We want to thank you for including these provisions from House File 25. The collaboration between public safety and behavioral health builds capacity within the emergency response system to better manage mental health related calls. Integrated social workers into the emergency response has helped lessen the need for repeated law enforcement contact by increasing care coordination and connections with needed services. Your funding will help us improve outcomes for residents. Before this meeting, I had a chance to talk to the Honorable Chairwoman of Ramsey County, and I shared with her the words that I want to share with you is that Hennepin County strongly supports their pilot. It is a superbly designed pilot. It fits the capabilities with the goals, and as importantly, takes into account the number of people that they're trying to serve in a pilot. Hennepin County eagerly awaits the results of that pilot. Additionally, the probation funding formula is complicated and has led to severe underfunding of one of the largest parts of Minnesota's criminal justice system. The lack of investment in community supervision has resulted in inconsistencies and inequities across the state. Increased state investment and equitable distribution will help address our inability to provide adequate services. Counties worked with AMC and the Department of Corrections to determine sufficient funding to deliver appropriate services. We thank you for the investment, even though the funding level currently falls short of our needs. We are glad to hear the committee will be adding the necessary policy language to ensure that future investments are more equitable. Thank you for your opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Mary Moriarty, and then on deck, Trista Mattis Castillo and Patrick Connolly. Welcome back. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Chair Mueller and members of the Public Safety Committee. My name is Mary Moriarty. I'm the Hennepin County Attorney. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of four different bills. The first, I want to express my gratitude to Representative Cedric Frazier's House File 25, which includes funding and grants for crime and violence prevention programs. Second, I'm pleased to see that the proposed funding of $11 million per year for crime victim services has been included in the bill. In our office, we put victims at the center of our work, and we're deeply committed to supporting victims and their families through unimaginable pain and grief. This funding will help to address the significant shortfall in funding for services that has arisen as a result of Victims of Crime Act funding gapped. Third, I want to express my support, Chair Mohler, for your House File 226, the prosecutor-initiated sentencing provision. Finally, and I want to spend some time on this, I'm particularly grateful for the inclusion of House File 600, which provides funding for the Ramsey County Juvenile Treatment Homes. We are facing an absolute crisis in Minnesota when it comes to how we intervene with justice-involved youth. We are failing our youth. We are dealing with an extraordinary lack of options to protect both the community and juveniles themselves. As someone who is responsible for prosecuting juveniles, I am compelled to speak in support of this measure due to the urgent need for a place to provide wraparound services for these youth. These treatment homes are essential. It is a Ramsey County bill. As Hennepin County attorney, I would ask that Hennepin be a part of that with proportional resources. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Trista Madison Steele, Patrick Connolly, and then Hollis Winston. Welcome back. Begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ramsey County Commissioner Trista Mattis Castillo. I want to voice our deep appreciation for your inclusion of House File 600, which is a holistic proposal that works to address and prevent the alarming youth violence in our community. Ramsey County is ready to pilot the small number of community-based and culturally specific intensive treatment homes. Youth placed in these residential settings will receive intensive wraparound therapeutic and social services to address their needs and interrupt the cycles of violence. These homes, developed in collaboration with community, our law enforcement partners, our county attorney, and our violence reduction leadership group, will include continuous learning with and from these youth and their families and service providers to improve the treatment and services we can provide young people. It is our hope that this work can serve as a model for future statewide efforts and ultimately improve outcomes and reduce recidivism. Equally important is the ongoing funding for reentry support, family peer-to-peer support, respite options, and employment opportunities for youth. These are things that our youth and families have been asking for, and we see the efforts as essential to youth violence reduction in our community. Ramsey County has done this extensive work. We've had the hard conversations with our community to come to this proposal that we first brought to the legislature in 2022. We appreciate the committee's support and thanks for this opportunity and your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Patrick Connolly, Hollis Winston, and Mark Rulli on deck.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I was in front of this committee 6 weeks ago to share my wife's carjacking experience being held at gunpoint in our garage with my daughter in the car while I was in the house in December of 21. As I mentioned, seeing and hearing my wife run and scream for her life with my daughter in her arms was the worst thing I've ever seen or heard. The teenagers that committed this awful crime had lengthy records, and my wife and I have arrived at the position that they should have never been in the position to commit this crime. They should have either been in a secure facility, or the programming they experienced should have had more of an impact on their life. Since this crime occurred, my wife and I have had dozens of conversations, and some of those very difficult, as Trista will testify to that. We've worked closely with Ramsey County, the commissioner's attorney's office, and the sheriff's office. More importantly, we've worked with Bob and Trista, and my wife and I feel that House File 600 strikes the appropriate balance to protect the community and provide the services that these teenagers need to give them a chance to lead a productive life. We are proud to support the work of Ramsey County and equally proud of the voices assembled to support House File 600, including bipartisan support here at the legislature, the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Business Partnership. We are so appreciative of the great leadership from Trista, Bob, and John. And I feel I can call them by their first names because they've taken the time to get to know my family and get to know our story, and we're so very proud of their leadership.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Next up, we have Mayor Winston, and then Chief Rulli on deck, and then Rob Dorf. Welcome, Mayor. You can introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Hollis Winston. I'm Mayor of the City of Brooklyn Park. I'm here because, you know, we support the Ramsey County, the accommodation for them to have a some type of juvenile facility. We're asking that on the Hennepin County. We have the same thing. Here's why. Less than 3 days, 3 days ago, six teens were shot in Brooklyn Center. When Brooklyn Center sneezes, Brooklyn Park sneezes as well, and that's not something we are willing to run away from. What people don't know is that less than a week before that, our Sergeant Robbie, who oversees the juvenile unit, and our SROs had predicted that within a number of weeks, that particular youth was either going to end up shot or dead or shooting somebody. So in Brooklyn Park, you know, we've done much of the work. When you talk about upstream dollars, which much of that's in the bill, we've done much of the work in terms of establishing violence interruption, alternative responses with social workers and therapists, even coming up with programs where we talk to runaways as soon as it happens because we know that's an indicator for what's going to happen down the road. We're even aggressively trying to hire as many police as possible. The reality is that when we hone in on these particular youth, and we're beginning to know who those youth are, there are no facilities to get ahead of some of these issues. And our concern is we don't want to hear about six more youth shot. There is an urgency here in our city and in Brooklyn Center and those surrounding suburbs that has got to be addressed. And we're also going to be bringing some other cities into the fold in terms of the work we're doing. But I just want to make clear the urgency of what we're dealing with, because I have to go and I have to speak to the mothers and the families that are watching their children be shot or losing their children.
Thank you. Next up, we have Chief Mark Rulli, Rob Dorr on deck, and then Rolf Olson next. Go ahead.
Welcome. Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Police Chief Mark Rulli of the Brooklyn Park Police Department. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you briefly. Madam Chair, you stole my thunder a little bit because you called out that the juvenile justice system is broken, the criminal justice system, and it absolutely is. Unfortunately, I see it all the time. One of the things that I've taken on as a police chief is I meet with the victims, mothers, and family of gun violence. And one thing that if you want to feel helpless, go sit with a mother who lost their child to gun violence. And one consistent thing that I hear is, why weren't we doing more? Why wasn't there more intervention? Recently, Park Center played a basketball game for the state championship on Saturday. It was missing a player who died from gun violence. That player was a victim of being around other individuals that had a long history, like the gentleman before us that talked about the kids that carjacked them. That is a continuous theme. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 felonies and be on probation and continue to victimize communities. Our juveniles lack the resources, the accountability, and the intervention. We're failing them at all fronts. And I do support the House File 600 as a great start, but it absolutely falls short of what we need today in Hennepin County. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Rob Dorr, Rolf Olson, and then Lori Weissman. Welcome back. If you want to introduce yourself again.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Rob Dorr, Vice President of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. We did submit written testimony, so I won't duplicate what's written there. I did want to talk about something I haven't talked about much before you, as some of these bills have taken shape, is some of the unforeseen consequences that'll happen to these individuals in the state. There was some effort to provide some protection for people who are some expansion of the ability for police chiefs and sheriffs to deny a permit to purchase, but the accountability measures weren't copied over from the permit to carry law. So a police chief can now deny an application for a permit based on a likelihood that the person is a danger to self or others, but there is no accountability for wrongful denials like there is in the Minnesota permit to carry law on 222.25. It also ignores the ability to have a court hearing for a wrongful revocation. In the permit to carry law, there is court fees paid to somebody if the county is responsible for court fees if the sheriff wrongfully denies somebody that isn't present in this. And while it may not be an issue for a privileged person to pay out of pocket to get a lawyer to overturn a wrongful denial of a permit to purchase, would be a substantial burden to poor and disadvantaged communities, which those communities are the most likely to have the ones with increased police contacts that would cause for an arbitrary denial. On the permit, on the red flag law, we do appreciate that the medical health professionals cannot directly petition for a red flag law, but we're still concerned on lines 240.7 that there is some chilling effect there, that the reporting that the healthcare professionals can do to the police may cause a chilling effect for mental health services.
Thank you. Next up, we have Ralph Olson, then Lori Weissman, and then Chief Potts after that. Welcome back. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your good work. My name is Rolf Olson. I'm no stranger to these halls. You've heard me speak before. As a father of a murdered daughter, I've made my contribution to the incredible numbers of gun victims whose tears flood our nation. This insanity has to end. I know the arguments that the gun lobby tosses out. Second Amendment, leaving out that part about the well-regulated militia. Mental health. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Guns protect all the other constitutional rights. New laws only inconvenience law-abiding citizens. But, you know, none of them carry any water for survivors of gun violence. I don't understand the morality of someone who pits the occasional inconvenience of a background check against the permanent consequence of a firearm that gets into the wrong hands. Try telling that to anyone who has buried a murdered child. Try telling that to the parents of the school children in Nashville. It sure doesn't fly with any person having a human heart. As a gun owner and outdoorsman myself, I'm not opposed to guns, but I know that what we are doing now is producing unacceptable results. So the facts are clear. States with the highest, strictest gun laws have the lowest rate of gun violence. ERPOs and background checks are simply part of a comprehensive plan for public safety, as we are doing here. So I implore you to pass common sense gun legislation and stop the carnage that is fracturing our communities.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Lori Weissman, then Chief Potts, and Sheriff Leslie. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Lori Weissman, and I am the co-chair of the National Council of Jewish Women, Minnesota's Gun Safety Committee. I am here to speak in support of House File 2890 on behalf of my family and the National Council of Jewish Women, Minnesota. I appreciate your hard work on this critical legislation and the opportunity to testify today. My cousin, Leslie Friedman, lost her life to gun violence in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan in 2001. And since then, I've advocated for policies to save lives and spare other families from the loss my family experienced. One main goal of the National Council of Jewish Women is to advance the well-being of children and families. And our Gun Safety Committee has been working to fulfill that mission for the past 20 years, advocating with our coalition partners, Protect Minnesota, Moms Demand Action, and Mothers Against Community Gun Violence, among others, for reasonable gun safety measures. I strongly believe that you all share NCJW's Minnesota's aspiration to advance the well-being of Minnesota families, as well as our respect for the right of citizens to live free from violence. Right now, we are not living free from violence in Minnesota. Look at the shootings of young people that we have witnessed in the past 24 hours alone. Heartbreaking. We can't look aside from this. It is incumbent on all of us to take action. The bill before you will address this epidemic by implementing common sense gun regulations and increasing funding for law enforcement and community violence intervention programs. This should not be a red or blue issue. Everyone agrees that public safety is essential to our quality of life. I know you all care about the well-being of your families and community, or you would not be doing this job. Please vote for 2890 to improve our security and safety statewide. Let's show the rest of our nation, especially on this day, that Minnesota can lead on this. Thank you all for your time and public service.
Thank you. Next up, we have, appreciate you being here, we have Chief Potts, Sheriff Leslie, and then Chief McMahon. Welcome back. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Jeff Potts. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. Our association represents over 300 police chiefs and 150 command staff officers across the state. First, we want to thank you for many, many parts of this bill. As the Chair mentioned on the outset, that this bill does aim to address many of the largest concerns and pressing issues in public safety, the background checks, extreme risk protection order, the issues related to fentanyl, recruitment and retention. Although we wish the health insurance money part was there, we do appreciate the other pieces that Representative Hewitt brought forward. I'll spend the bulk of my time, Madam Chair, focused on the areas of the bill that we oppose as it's currently drafted, and we look forward to continuing to work with you and the members of the committee to address these. In Article 8, there's a provision that would require police agencies to share private data related to misconduct investigations with the Post Board. We feel that the agency should have the ability to complete their investigation before being required to share that private data. A modification to the bill that would be acceptable would be to provide a time frame for when the data would need to be shared. We feel strongly that sharing the data before it's completed, the investigation could interfere with the integrity of the investigation. The next section, Article 8, regarding no-knock warrants, we agree that more can be done to address and regulate no-knock warrants. However, we feel the language in this bill may have unintended consequences that could create unreasonable risks for the public and for police officers. We believe that the Civilian Review Board language in Article 10 is problematic, specifically the language that grants Civilian Review Board subpoena and final discipline authority. I'll wrap up here, Madam Chair. I know the bell's ringing. We'd like to work with you further on that. Lastly, with the current TAILS target, we feel there's no reason to not eliminate the sunset on the Philando Castile training fund. These training funds are critical to our members and their ability to keep their agencies trained at the highest level. Madam Chair, we look forward to working with you and the rest of the committee to try and address these issues. Thank you for your allowing me the time here to testify.
Thanks for your testimony. Sheriff Leslie's next, then we have Chief Sickfund, and then Zachary Graham. Welcome back. Please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tim Leslie. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for the Sheriff's Association, representing 87 elected sheriffs that serve our citizens. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee today and comment on the proposed House Public Safety Omnibus Bill. First, I would like to acknowledge the inclusions of significant resources for the state takeover of expenses related to sexual assault examinations. Big deal. Community co-responder grants. Thank you. First responder peer-to-peer mental health grants. Thank you again. And violent crime reduction grants. Awesome. The proposal, however, includes many provisions that the committee has previously heard from the MSA and our law enforcement partners that we have concerns about. The continued sunset of the post-training reimbursement funds. The restrictions on the types of mandated training eligible for reimbursement from post. The expanded authority of civilian review panels, you just heard that from Chief Potts. The creation of statewide body camera data policies, one size does not fit all. The complete elimination of no-knock warrants and new evidence suppression language. There is also a new provision requiring the DOC to study jail consolidation that we have serious concerns about. To our knowledge, this provision was never introduced as a bill or previously discussed in this committee. MSA has always opposed a top-down approach to county consolidation of services. The Minnesota Sheriff's Association continues to be ready to further discuss these issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Chief Zickman, then Zachary Graham, and then Jason Anderson. Go ahead and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Madison Zickman. I'm the fire chief for the city of Fridley, as well as a co-leader for one of the state hazardous materials response teams that covers the city of Minneapolis and four counties north of there up the Highway 10 and 35W corridor. Thanks for having me today. I think I'm outnumbered. I believe I'm the only fire service leader that you're going to hear from today, but I want to take a few moments to address a couple issues on our side. First and foremost, to express our support and thanks for the provisions that you have included within this omnibus bill, especially for the surcharge increase to the fire safety account that gets us back to the 0.65% and allows us to do many things throughout the state of Minnesota. I do want to emphasize a couple areas of potential gaps, and I'm going to point to the written testimony by the Public Safety Commissioner, as these were Governor Walz's recommendations, and we support those. The first of which was a proposal for a $1 million allocation that came over to the DPS. That was split for two different reasons. The first was to fund the state bomb squads, who are currently severely underfunded. They provide support to all of our local law enforcement agencies in all corners of the state of Minnesota. The second portion of that was for a non-responsible party fund. Much of what we do through the bomb squads and the other state teams, including hazmat, does not have a billable party that we can go back to, and so we end up either eating that cost at a local level or dipping into other coffers and taking away from funds that are needed for other important resources. These funds are, these teams, I apologize, are already operating at maximum efficiency, and we feel that those low-cost dollars are just a small ask to keep them functional and respond to the most dangerous situations around the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Next, we have Zachary Graham. Then on deck, we have Jason Anderson and Midge Christensen. Welcome and go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Zach Graham, and I am a senior hearing officer with the Hearings and Release Unit at the Minnesota Department of Corrections. I'm testifying today as a proud member of MAPE. I would first like to thank the chair and the committee for fully funding the department's operating deficiency funding request. We are currently in a staffing crisis with many of our members working out of class and covering shifts, including corrections officers stretching beyond their capacity. We'd also like to thank the committee for their strong investment in community supervision, providing equitable ongoing funding. However, we are very concerned with the committee's decision to not fully fund the staffing and maintenance requests, the staff safety recommendations from the 2020 OLA report, the virtual courts line, nor the recruitment and retention requests that were included in the governor's proposal. With the additional programs being proposed around the programming and incentivized release, worthy incentives will fail without proper staffing. Staff are tasked with addressing the incarcerated population's medical, mental health, programming, and transition needs. As an individual hearing officer, I make decisions that impact not only the lives of the incarcerated population, but their family, friends, coworkers, and the community. The decisions made regarding the individual areas of need while addressing public safety concerns are only successful when programming is appropriately staffed. Finally, with more than a half a dozen staff being assaulted over the past 3 weeks, we are asking the committee prioritize the investments in staffing. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. And then before we have a series of folks with corrections and probation actually here, and I just want to say that once again that we do intend to adopt the formula. It just didn't happen in this spreadsheet, so just keep that in mind as you are testifying here. So we've got Jason Anderson, Midge Christensen, and then Molly Bruner. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jason Anderson, past president of the Minnesota Association of County Probation Officers and the former director of Itasca County Probation. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your support in recognizing the need to increase funding for community supervision. It's been a long time coming. The county probation office model has been underfunded grossly for the past 27 years. It's been 27 years since we've been funded to the amount that the statute requires we are funded. As last year, we received 26% reimbursement, where the statute says we should get 50%. So that's the measure by which we've been underfunded. Community supervision, all the way from pretrial to supervised release, we're the exit from the criminal justice system. We facilitate the exit from the criminal justice system. I had a former probation officer whose husband was a deputy sheriff say once to her husband, "Honey, you catch him and I clean him. You catch him and I clean him." Your fish cleaning shed has been woefully under-resourced for a long time. The dollars contemplated in this bill help get us where we need to be. It doesn't get us quite where we need to be, but it is helpful. And it's helpful to learn that the language around the funding formula is going to be revised as well, because it's been inequitable. Each component of this system needs to be up and running and fully funded to be as efficient and as effective as it can be. We're doing the best with what we have, and we greatly appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Midge Christensen, then we have Molly Bruner and Jill Sims. Welcome. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Moeller, members of the committee. I've been a rural community corrections director for 23 years. I was a probation agent for 8 years before that. My name is Midge Christensen, by the way, 6 West Community Corrections. This is a watershed moment for community supervision in Minnesota. Probation and supervised release have been significantly underfunded for decades, as Jason indicated. That directly impacts public safety in multiple ways and at multiple points across the system. The fact that community supervision in crisis is not a new story, we have been here for years telling you the facts, the figures, and some of the ramifications. but we can no longer afford to wait for a solution. This is Minnesota AMC and all 87 counties' number one public safety priority. We greatly appreciate the hard work of Representative Feist and others around this important issue and for the initial ongoing investment amount that was included in the bill. However, if Minnesota wants to remain a low incarceration state with an effective criminal justice system, it is absolutely crucial that Minnesota adopt the single equitable funding formula for all 87 counties. It must also fully fund the vital function of community supervision through the $83 million increase that was reflected in House File 1838 originally. That is the actual level of need that was identified through data collection and analysis. So members, this is the Public Safety Committee. And simply put, effective supervision is public safety. And communities in every corner of this state deserve no less. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for testimony. Molly Bruner, then we have Jill Sims and Matt Ely. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Molly Bruner, the director of Scott County Community Corrections. I'm also here on behalf of the Minnesota Inter-County Association. Thank you to Chair Moeller for including increased funding for community supervision in House File 2890. I'd also like to thank Representative Feist for her work on House File 1838. We strongly encourage that continued consideration for formula language and additional appropriations from House File 1838 into the bill. The formula used to distribute probation funding, as you've heard, is outdated and has created inequities based on lack of resources. For Scott County, what that means is that between 2008 and 2022, we've only received $100,000 more money in state funding compared to our levy increase of $1 million. The problem is not new, and counties have been working on fixing this for a long time, long before learning about the state budget surplus in 2022. We're struggling to keep up. Our caseloads are maxed out, and without adult probation officers and state support, many individuals fall through the cracks. In 2017 and 18, we did a recidivism study in Scott County, and what came back was we were unable to handle the volume of felony-level high-risk supervision clients. 50% of our population in Scott County is monitored in our phone reporting center. There's 100 adult clients on felony supervision that are recidivating at double the rate than is expected. If the formula and funding in House File 1838 is not passed this year, Scott County actually faces a tough decision on whether we can continue to provide supervision services. So thank you for your recognition of this important proposal, and we look forward to seeing it included in the final bill.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. So Jill Sims, Matt Ealing, and then we'll close it out with Commissioner Schnell and Commissioner Jacobson. Welcome back. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jill Sims, and I'm the Director of Government Relations at Hospitality Minnesota. We represent Minnesota's restaurants, hotels, lodging, resort, and campground sectors. Today, we'd like to comment on the section in the DE pertaining to carbon monoxide alarms in hotel rooms, lines 80.26 through 82.27. The number one priority of all hotel and lodging operators is to ensure the safety of all guests and employees. Today, in the state of Minnesota, if you stay in a hotel room that has a fuel-burning appliance or is served by a fuel-burning source, there is a carbon monoxide detector, as required by the state of Minnesota Fire Code, which was updated to require this in 2020. Traditionally, the Fire Code is revised and adopted through the rulemaking process and has that adequate implementation and education time for hotels to be able to comply. The hospitality industry hopes that there's an opportunity to work with the committee to specifically address the implementation timeline. In Minnesota, there are 87,000 hotel rooms across nearly 1,100 properties. As I mentioned, generally when the fire code is revised and adopted like it was in 2020, there is an education and implementation timeline for hotels to appropriately plan and budget for those changes. At this time, we do not have clarity on how many units will need to be ordered, what the supply of the product is, and there are some supply chain challenges, and if hotels have the budget or labor availability to install by an August 2023 deadline. We ask the committee to amend the language to reflect the current implementation timeline that the State Fire Marshal's Office uses when implementing changes to the fire code. We look forward to working with the committee and are happy to be a resource. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Matt Ealing, and then the commissioners want to work your way down. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Chair Moeller, members. Matt Ealing, Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. We have 3 points to make briefly. First, we'd like to thank Representative Feist for working with Senator Limmer on the Minnesota Fusion Center reporting language that you'll find starting on line 76.25. This is the kind of bipartisan work that we feel is necessary to preserve government transparency and accountability in the state, and it is appreciated by our board. We have two technical points to make. The first relates to the data section of the retail theft language that starts on line 151.4. And we worked with the Senate to make a change to that language, the specific language found on lines 151.22 to 151.24, that would make this new section of law consistent with longstanding treatment of inactive law enforcement investigative data. And so we'd urge the House to follow that change that was made in the Senate that was adopted last Friday in SF 893. And finally, in the interest of clarity, we would recommend that the changes to the body camera section that we testified about in House Judiciary on March 14th be adopted to ensure that public access contemplated by that section is implemented without confusion. The changes that we suggested in that hearing incorporate suggestions from the Data Practices Office, who has likewise urged some technical changes for the purpose of statutory clarity. Our previous testimony, Madam Chair and members, is posted online in the former committees that have heard this previously. So,
thank you. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
And before the commissioners begin, I just want to clarify something that was said in the record about the jail study. That was House File 1134. It was a Chair Fuli bill, and we heard that on March 10th. Thank you so much, Commissioner. Introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Paul Schnell, Commissioner of the Department of Corrections. Chair Mueller, the DOC is grateful for you and your thoughtful approach to investing in public safety in Minnesota. The investments and policy in your bill are transformative for the correction system in our state. The DOC shares your goal of creating a safer Minnesota, and state investment in what works is more critical than ever. House File 2890 does that. It accomplishes this through the inclusion of the Minnesota Rehabilitation Reinvestment Act, creating a long-term, comprehensive, and evidence-based approach to preventing reoffending and incentivizing rehabilitation. Through your leadership, House File 2890 provides the DOC with critically needed base funding that invests in transformative services to ensure successful community reentry. It provides a historic investment in correctional supervision across our state to better meet the needs of individuals subject to community supervision, including tribal governments. It establishes a clemency review board to expand accessibility and availability of the pardon process, and it creates an indeterminate sentence review board to provide a more reliable, correctionally sound mechanism for parole decisions. Chair, as the budget process moves forward, we hope to have further discussions with you and your colleagues about other critical investments in the governor's budget recommendation. I'll just highlight them quickly. Funding for the statewide data infrastructure to replace the agency's critically antiquated records and data management system, creating the creation of a family support unit at the DOC to provide capacity to more strategically and meaningfully strengthen family ties, investments in recruitment, retention, and staff wellness, funding for the virtual court hearing process, and creating an evidence-based practice unit to guide and ensure training and policies and practices that are data-driven and solution-focused, investing in the accountability and transparency, such as diversity, equity, and inclusion of our staff, policy reviews and research, and establishing an economic opportunity and public safety unit to invest in the DOC's employee unit to build pathways to incarceration. While much work remains before the end of the session, we know the efforts of the Public Safety Committee and the budget bill you are bringing forward is something that I believe you can all be proud of, and we as a state can be proud of. We look forward to partnering with you between now and the end of the session, and I thank you for your leadership on behalf of Minnesota and its public safety.
Thank you, Commissioner. Now the next commissioner, go ahead and introduce yourself and begin, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Mueller, members of the Public Safety Committee. For the record, my name is Bob Jacobson. I am the Commissioner of Public Safety. First, I need to thank the committee for their partnership in this session. I'm grateful that this bill includes the funding necessary for the Department of Public Safety to maintain our current service levels. I'm in complete agreement with you that the BCA Force Investigation Unit has proven its value, and the investment you're making to continue that unit is critical. The bill also includes a robust investment in community grants. This is funding that's critical to the prevention and intervention efforts that will improve the safety of communities throughout Minnesota. Thank you. The federal VOCA gap in funding is not an issue of our making, but I am also relieved that we have the resources to fill it. There's a few areas of this bill I'd like to call your attention to help hopefully have some continuing discussions. The Waltz Flanagan Public Safety budget includes critical investment to help decrease evidence turnaround times for violent crimes. The funding, however, along with the accompanying policy language, only covers sexual assault examination kits, would exclude other violent crimes like homicides and non-fatal shootings. We're concerned this approach will negatively impact other violent crime evidence turnaround times. We understand the BCA's violent reduction strategy can be funded with some money, including a broader bucket of one-time funding. While we appreciate that acknowledgement of this important work, this funding method does create a bit of a fiscal cliff. It's also my duty to raise the request made by the Office of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives. That office has been identified as a need for additional staff to meet our statutory obligations. Also, the DPS, Division of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement, needs funding for IT investment in its Criminal Justice Information Services Network. Without this funding, they would not be able to complete the necessary background checks. Lastly, I want to thank you, Chair Moeller, and this committee for considering emergency and first responder wellness. I believe your grant funding would be a critical step toward our proposal for a first responder wellness office, and it would be an excellent opportunity to work in conjunction with that funding. And lastly, thank you to all the legislators and House staff for your work on this bill. DPS looks forward to working with you as we move forward together to serve all communities to build a safer Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony and all your work. And just a heartfelt thank you to all of our testifiers today. Also, really good job of sticking to your timelines. And I actually found that your testimony was, all of you were very succinct and to the point, and it was very helpful. So thank you so much for that. And with that, that concludes today's agenda, and we'll see you on Thursday for Markup Day. We are adjourned.